of ACC Nation, Clemson closed one door and opened yet another as the Tigers laid a good old-fashioned butt-whooping on Alabama in the national championship game, 44-16. It's safe to say we'll be seeing more of both of these teams in the future. Legendary Virginia football coach George Welsh passed away. He was 85. Welsh, a former Heisman Trophy candidate from his playing days at Navy, proved to lethargic Cavalier fans during his tenure from 1982 to 2000 that the school could have an exciting football program. It wasn't all about the hoops. The ACC had a mixed bag of results in bowl action. The winners, Wake Forest, Duke, Syracuse, Virginia, and of course, Clemson. The losers, Georgia Tech, a new coach there. Miami, a new coach. Virginia Tech, Pitt, an offensive shakeup in the coaching ranks. NC State, Notre Dame. Will there and should there be more shakeups in staffs? Probably so. Quick look at winter sports. USCHO ice hockey rankings. Notre Dame men at 6. Boston College women at 10. NWCA wrestling. NC State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, and Pitt are all in the top 25 to start a new year. USTFCCC preseason indoor track and field rankings will be out this week. In CSCAA swimming and diving, the ACC has 6 teams in the top 25 of both the men's and women's rankings. And in basketball, the women's AP top 25 includes Notre Dame, Louisville, NC State, and Syracuse. On the men's side, Duke, Virginia, Florida State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, and NC State. National championship-wise, the ticket sales, according to a piece in Yahoo Finance, tanked. And part of the reason, the big reason, travel-related costs. Pretty expensive being put up there in a hotel and paying for food for several people for several days.
Yeah, you're asking two fan bases to fly across country right after the Christmas holiday when, you know,
nobody's got money.
Exactly.
We're all paying back our credit cards.
You can't think, you got to put this thing all over the country. You got to let other fan bases enjoy it. Not that, you know, Pac-12 fans have anything to be smiling about, because it doesn't look like any of their teams are going to be sniffing the title for a while now. It looks like that whole conference is just an absolute mess, but
yeah, that's going to be a few years before we see any turnaround there. At least three. That's a projection from me. Here's a word of advice: when tickets go on sale for 2020 Atlanta, make sure you buy early and often, because the odds are, based upon what we're looking at this year and going into next year, it'll probably be a couple of teams from the South. And if it's in Atlanta, then transportation and hotels and all that stuff, those costs go way down, and everybody starts flocking. And the last time there was that scenario, the tickets for Alabama, Georgia, at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium was like almost 2.5 times what it's going for now. So, like I said, if you're going to plan ahead, the minute those tickets go on sale, I would be grabbing them up, because at the very least, your resale value is going to be awesome too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that game is going to sell out, just because the likelihood of two teams from the South being there are going to be fairly high as it is. Just kind of thinking of who might be the early favorites to go there next year.
Alabama and Clemson.
Rule out Alabama, and you know they'll travel anywhere along in the South. So you know they're going to show up if it's them, and even if it's Clemson, it's not a very far drive or a flight to Atlanta.
No reason to fly. I'll be honest with you. There's no reason to fly. You should drive. If you're at Clemson, you're that close. Alabama, a little further, but you know what? It's really not that far to drive. I often drive from Virginia down to Louisiana on a fairly frequent basis. And of course, that's kind of a long haul for one shot, but you know, I have stuff timed out. Sometimes I'll stop in Atlanta and stay, and depends where I'm going, you know? So, that is not far. It's not far for either one of those schools to go.
Yeah. From Clemson's campus to the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is 2 hours.
Yeah. So I stay at home, sleep, eat your own food, and then drive. makes a lot of sense. I know that people in Atlanta don't want to hear that, especially the tourism people, but hey, why would you drive the opposite direction to go to Charlotte, pick up a plane and drive, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And it's the same thing with anybody in Alabama. It makes no sense to fly to that game unless you just absolutely want to blow some bucks, because that's what you're going to do. It's wasting money. Take that money and put it into something else, you know, extra drinks. That's where I'm going.
And from Tuscaloosa, from the campus of the University of Alabama to Atlanta is just under 3 hours. So, yeah, you're not looking at a huge drive time, if anything. No. You drive, get a hotel for a couple nights, and drive back.
Yeah, and hey, if you're going to get a hotel, I will just tell you that if you stay on the outskirts, you're much better off. I tend to be in Atlanta most of the time, but I did 1 year, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. I actually went into suburbs, and man, the prices just really dropped off significantly. So, well, let's reflect a bit on ACC football for a moment. Now that most of the dust has settled, I would say all of it is settled now that we have decided the national championship. So we'll take a look at just exactly who did well and did not do well.
Well, I'll start in the Atlantic Division. You look at Syracuse having one of the best seasons they've had in a long time, getting a bowl win over West Virginia, finishing the season with 10 wins, and Dino Babers getting a well-deserved contract extension. They had, I'd say, an amazing season. They lose Eric Dungy, and they lose some other key parts that are graduating. Be interesting to see what they can do for an encore next year. NC State, you know, they had a tough end to the season, getting blown out in their bowl game. They lose Ryan Finley. They lose, you know, some of the better receivers. They lose a decent amount of talent. So, I mean, they could still be a bowl contender, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're in a little bit of a rebuild next year. You know, Boston College, that was weird that what happened with that game getting canceled, but you know they do get AJ Dillon back next year, so there's some good news. Looking at the Coastal, you know, Pitt, they had a close loss in their bowl game after winning the Coastal, but they lose a lot next year, especially on offense, and their offensive coordinator it was let go, so there's going to be a lot of turnover on that offensive side of the ball. Georgia Tech, remember they have a new coach, Paul Johnson, retired. They went out and got blown out by Minnesota in their bowl game. Virginia drubbed South Carolina in their bowl game, and I think they're one of the favorites in the Coastal this year. And you can accuse me of bias, but when you really think about it, when they bring back most of the offense, save for Olamide Zaccheaus returning a lot of that defense, getting Bryce Hall back for his senior season, you know, one of the top corners in the country now coming back. And one of their weaknesses, defensive line, is getting a lot stronger with some top commits coming in for 2019, plus some healthy players coming back like Mandy Alonso, who has been a nice little gem for that defense. Miami, a lot of turnover there. They lose Mark Richt, who has stepped down. They hire Manny Diaz back after being the head coach of Temple for literally 2 weeks and getting a lot of turnover there. They lose a couple players there. There's going to be some turnover on the offensive side of the ball. The defense should still be really good next year. Virginia Tech, a team I think could be, you know, right up there with Virginia as far as a contender in the Coastal. They were one of the youngest teams in the country in terms of just, you know, players that are playing with not a lot of experience. And you know that's going to be a good team next year. Could be some questions at quarterback and running back, but we're going to see another really good defensive team. They played a lot better as the season went on. And Duke, you know, another team, you know, closed out with a 8-win season, but there's going to be a lot of turnover on the offensive side of the ball with Daniel Jones going pro. They lose a lot of skill position players. I know TJ Ramming's going pro. It was, you know, a lot of that offense has gone, and some of their better defensive players too. I believe Joe Giles Harris has declared. So there's going to be a lot of that. Could be a rebuilding year at Duke next year, but then again, you know, Cutcliffe tends to overachieve a lot. So if they make a bowl again, I certainly wouldn't be surprised.
Now, Cutcliffe at Duke, Does that surprise you, that combination? He's an overachiever. Most overachievers are at Duke. So,
yep.
Perfect place for him. That whole Rick Diaz thing was just staggered me. You know, when you guys sent that across on the you know notice, I was sort of like, what? Really?
That was just really weird, too, because you know, you figure he's bringing back, you know, he's got, you know, another strong, granted, he would have lost Manny Diaz to coaching Temple, but you knew they were going to get, still had another good defense coming back. I know they were bringing some potential high draft picks back who decided to stay in school. A lot of weird rumors going on about, you know, who might take over. I know Rex Ryan's name was involved, and I would have been interested to see what kind of footprint he would have had in recruiting. Insert very subtle joke there. But Manny Diaz in the end, I think, was a smart hire because he already knew, this team better than pretty much anybody else. And yeah, I know it kind of weird, you know, he was a coach at Temple for 2 weeks, but then again, he's from Miami. You can't fault a guy for getting an opportunity to coach in one of the better conferences in the league and coaching in your home. So yeah, it's a natural fit.
I'm right there with you. I just figured, you know, well, it is what it is. Excuse me for knocking around things here on my microphone. I think that was a good move as well. I just, I was kind of shocked by that whole thing of Rick stepping aside and saying he was retiring. I don't think that's retirement, unless there's something else going on there that we're not aware of and haven't heard hide nor hair of anything. And you know how the rumor mill is. Let's get into basketball. Here's a question. Excuse me if I keep coughing. I have some kind of grunge that I picked up and I can't get rid of. So in about a week ago, my voice literally, I sounded like I was a preteen. It was squeaking and all over the place. Our ACC men's basketball teams, who we thought they were. Now, we're going to get into some analysis here. The ACC opener on January 1st. The Hokies hosted Notre Dame. They cruised to a win. No problem. January 3rd, the Wolfpack out-hustled Miami. 5-point final there. Now we start getting into the meat of the schedule. On Saturday, the 5th, Georgia Tech rolled over Wake Forest. Now, to me, that was a fairly significant win for Georgia Tech. Probably more significant for Wake Forest, and we'll get into why here in just a moment as Will starts taking a look and dismantling all these games. Virginia handled FSU. Virginia Tech outperformed Boston College. Popovich, he's just like this lumbering giant. I mean, sometimes I like to watch him play, but other times, oh my gosh, it's like, is this guy really? You put him on the floor? Anyway, UNC shut down Pitt. Pitt has a long way to go yet before they get up into that realm of basketball in the ACC. Syracuse over Notre Dame, not a surprise, but maybe a surprise more about how close it was. And Duke stamped out a win over Clemson. And so let's get into some of these games here. This Georgia Tech, that was a pretty significant win, point-wise especially, over Wake Forest. Your thoughts on this game, Will?
Well, yeah, I never expected Georgia Tech to score 92 points in a ACC game. But when you shoot just under 56% from the field and go 23 of 32 just in two-pointers, then, yeah, you got a good chance to win. Plus, they went 28 of 34 at the line. So, yeah, Georgia Tech just shot the ball really well. You hit their free throws, did everything right. They were led by James Banks, who went for 20. I like Jose Alvarado's a player who is a really good player for Georgia Tech. You know, he remember he had a pretty nasty injury that ended his season early last year, and he's coming back. He played well. Yeah, I mean, he didn't shoot the ball yesterday, but still had 13 points, but 7 assists and 0 turnovers. That's a great stat. When your point guard can have that high of assist total and no turnovers. Wake Forest, you know, that program is a dumpster fire, and I know, and you know, you really wonder what's going to happen with Danny Manning. You know, can you buy his contract out after given him a contract extension a year ago. That that is looking worse and worse by the day. It's really sad because they have some talent on that roster. I mean, Jalen Horde might be a one and done caliber player, and he had a pretty good game yesterday. So did Brandon Childress, but this is not a very good team, not a very well coached team, I should say.
And that's the point right there. You know, he's been there long enough that the shine is off now. You know, when you pull a name like Danny Manning in as a coach, it's a recruiting draw. You know, that's a bright, shiny thing. Okay. If I were a player, Danny Manning's your coach. Ooh, I'd be looking at that. I'd be listening. I'd sit down and listen. I want to hear a little deeper, obviously, but now, you know, it's been long enough that the recruiting, you know, I think it's still kind of there because, I mean, it's got to be a little bit of a challenge, to be frank about it, about pulling, you know, top-end players into Wake Forest. And that's not degrading Wake Forest at all. It's just that it's more of a challenge when you're a smaller school, period. Mm-hmm. But now you like you're talking about, you've got a top grade player, and it's really about coaching at this point. You know, what's your coach and coaching staff doing to put it all together? And I just don't see it happening. And I, you know, we went earlier, we talked about this. We've talked about this last year. I think Danny Manning is out the door. And I know that you're bringing up the money factor. That is a problem. It's always a problem. But we looked at all these other coaches that have been out the door that we were surprised. Hey, they're going to buy out these people? Yeah. It's going to happen. You can't afford to allow a program to flounder for this long and remain competitive. You actually start losing money because of that. You know, your fan base goes down. Your alumni are looking at it and going, I can't support this. So that money trails off. You know, it affects the entire athletic program when one sport is not being taken care of, especially a major sport. And I think this is the situation that they're looking at. I think they have to start weighing very carefully. And I'll just call for it right now. I said it earlier. I think that if he doesn't perform in the ACC, he's gone. And quite frankly, I'm not so sure that I wouldn't pull the trigger probably by late March. I would say, hey, you know, if we're not doing something really positive here in the ACC, you're gone. We got to get, I'll take somebody off the staff and they'll take it and run with it from there and see if they can make a difference. In the meantime, I'm going to start looking for somebody to take the reins of this program and turn it into something. I don't see Danny Manning doing that. I think he is dragging the program down. I think he needs to be replaced. And I'm saying that by late February, early March, he's out the door. Now, that's if I were in a position to be a major sponsor of athletic programs at Wake Forest, that's what I'd be putting in the ear of the athletic director right now. And I would be very adamant about it.
Interesting. And I guess I don't necessarily disagree with you. We saw already this year with UCLA getting rid of their coach, you know, just after they lost to Liberty, and they had a thing in his contract where there was a much cheaper buyout after, I want to say, March 30th, but they just couldn't take it anymore and let mm-hmm. him go right on New Year's Eve, I believe. I mean, there's precedent to do already this year to do it. I'm just surprised. I don't know. I don't have all the particulars of the contract, so I don't know if it's something they can even afford to do or what. But yeah, they're going to have a very tough decision on their hands.
Yeah, they will, and we'll see what happens. One lone voice right now, that's how I feel, out in the woods all by myself. You know, it's not enough to make something like this happen. But I tell you what, that kind of stuff is like a tsunami. It just builds, and all of a sudden the wave hits. Let's go into the Virginia and FSU game. You caught only a little bit of the tail end of this game, so basically you saw people being pulled from the stands to play. It was a significant win for Virginia. I won't say it's a significant loss for Florida State, even though they're ranked very high in the country. I just think that the top five in the country are really all in this little, you know, league of their own when it comes down to quality players and programs. Florida State's not there yet, but I tell you what, that program is pretty awesome. I'm very impressed by how far they've come, what they've done. Leonard Hamilton's done a fantastic job. Tony Bennett has done the same with more at his disposal, and that showed up in that game.
Yeah, you look at the score and see they only won by 13, but with less than 3 minutes left, Virginia was up by 29. And like Jim said, you know, they basically pulled anybody and everybody. And I thought they tried to get Dave Matthews, who was in attendance at the game, to come out and play a couple minutes. But we saw exactly why Virginia can be the most dangerous team in this country. And that's when Kyle Guy can hit from pretty much anywhere on the court. We've seen it over the last few games. So he hit 11 straight threes over the last couple of games. And when somebody can hit them at that rate, then, yeah, just watch out. And overall, over the last three games, Kyle Guy's 22 of 33 from the field. That tells you just how dangerous he's been lately. It was basically him and Braxton Key, who had 20 off the bench for Virginia. And he's played far and away his best game of the season for the Hoos. And they both shot 7-11 from the field. You got great performances from, on the defensive end from DeAndre Hunter, 6 rebounds. Diakite played well. It was basically Braxton Key and Kyle Guy doing the bulk of the work for Virginia. And then obviously, the defense is going to be every bit as stingy as ever, and held the Florida State to 34% shooting. And you can't take a whole lot out of a game when a team shoots 34%. They just have an off shooting day. There's still plenty of time in this season. I know Florida State's still a really good team. They just got handled at a place where it's almost impossible to win at on the road.
You mentioned Dave Matthews. I'll also point out the fact that author John Grisham, who's one of my favorite authors, was there.
And yes,
a friend of mine, former NASCAR driver Rick Mast, was there. So
love Rick Mast.
it's one of those things where, programs, when they start drawing celebrities...
look at you name dropping on the podcast.
I know, man. I tell you, somebody's got to. Hey, it's there. It's fun. Fun watching the game, but it's also fun seeing some of these folks that we enjoy extracurricular there as well. Virginia Tech outperformed Boston College. I thought it was a little bit of a sloppy game on the part of both. The Hokies, they're something. They're definitely a team to be watched.
I mean, they're going to move deeper into the top 10 this week with Florida State losing ahead of them. Kansas lost ahead of them. Nevada lost ahead of them. So they're going to be they're going to have a single digit number in front of them, which tells you the kind of team Buzz Williams has here this season. They were a little slow out of the gates. Boston College didn't have Winston Tabbs, who's arguably their second best player behind Kai Bowman. He's a great shooter and a good scorer for this team. Like I say, he was out with an injury yesterday, so that hurt him. But Virginia Tech has had the best players on that court. Nikhil Alexander Walker, who is going to go pro after the season, he had 25. Kerry Blackshear had 20-7, and I think he's the most critical player for the Hokies, because as long as he stays out of foul trouble, then he's going to be a threat on both ends of the court. Justin Robinson had 12. Yeah, he's kind of taken a back seat on this team to Alexander Walker and Blackshear. You know, they're still a good shooting team. You know, they shot 6 of 22 from three yesterday, which isn't great, but they hit their twos, and they were 21 of 25 at the line. So that was a big deal. And say Boston College, you know, Jordan Chapman led them with 18. Kai Bowman, 14.7 boards, 5 assists, but 5 turnovers, which is not very good. That's a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, and that's just not very good. But like I say, they did miss Winston Tabbs in this game, but they shot 39% from the field, and I feel like he could have been a help in this game. I don't think they would have won necessarily, but they would have shot better, I feel like.
I like watching Bowman play. Great player. I wish he would change his hair color back, though.
Yeah. And it's kind of like it's kind of like what Dennis Rodman used to do back in the day when he was playing for the Bulls. Mm-hmm. You never knew what hair. I mean, Bowman's hair isn't as wacky as Rodman's was, but it just kind of popped in my head. That was the last person I remember consistently changing hair color.
Yeah. And the word is, I was reading a tweet by David Teal, who said that Clark was definitively not coming back.
Yep. Clark is not going to play. Landers Nolly won't play. That one surprised me. I know there were some academic questions with him. Mm-hmm. You know, Clark had gotten suspended by the team, and there's rumors floating around as to why. I really wonder if he's even going to come back next year. I'll be interested to see what's going on there. I'm not even sure if he's a senior or not. I don't remember off the top of my head, but you know, the Nolly situation is interesting, and one that has gotten a lot of heat from the NCAA for, but we'll see. You know, we'll see. I mean, they're still doing just fine without him.
Yeah. I think that what might drive Clark's decision, in part, on his side at least, how well Virginia Tech does this season. If, as you were pointing out, they have they move into the single digits in the top 25, and they do well postseason, which we would anticipate them doing because of that, then that will drive him to straighten out some things and get right with Virginia Tech and vice versa. So that might be a factor. We'll see. You know, like you said, there's a rumor mill there, and we won't get into the rumor mill because that's not what we do. That other thing with the NCAA, that is an issue that may not be resolved in favor of Virginia Tech or Nolly. So, you know, so I'm just saying. We'll see how that all rolls out. UNC shut down Pitt. Pitt is having a good season and rebuilding, and they have an immense amount of confidence. I thought they played fairly decently based upon their rebuild. And there were some aspects of how UNC played that I wasn't too impressed with.
I think this says more about North Carolina than it does Pitt. I mean, Pitt shot just over 30% in this game. Not gonna, like I say, 2 of 19 from three. You know, that's kind of the, you know, it's gonna progress to the mean per se. They're not gonna shoot, 2 of 19 every day from three. Their better days are ahead there. But I just think this had a lot more to do with North Carolina and just quieting the haters per se. I know they still didn't shoot the. I mean, they shot 43%, which isn't bad. But, you know, they missed, you know, when you look at it, they missed both teams missed 42 shots in this game. There were 97 total rebounds in this game. UNC grabbed 51 because that's what they do. They rebound. They're consistently one of the better rebounding teams in the country. And, you know, that's what they did here. We're seeing Kobe White is, you know, looking like a one and done type. He shot the ball pretty well. Luke May was, you know, a steady double-double, another game there. Cam Johnson, another game. And we keep talking, you know, all the stuff about not Nasir Little and why is he a sixth man. And you know what? You don't need, like, he's not in a position where he needs to score a lot. I think people, yeah, he's, you get the highly touted five-star kid, you think he's going to start right away. But Little's still getting plenty of playing time, and he's, you know, contributing, you know, still fairly well. I mean, he's got, you know, players who play in his position ahead of him who are better. Let's just be real here. And he's a fine sixth man for what this team needs. I think he had 6.6 rebounds. That's a pretty solid game. Nothing, you know, not like, nothing too like special about it, but he just a yeoman's work basically.
Yeah. I will say this, that, yeah, I hear a lot of chirping, especially out of North Carolina media. You're right there in the backyard, right? So you see and hear more. There was so much touting of Luke May at the beginning of the season. And the more I watch him, I'm just going like, okay, I'm still waiting for... And you mentioned he had a double-double. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. But I'm still waiting for something spectacular, you know? I'm waiting for that because I had all this buildup from all these folks who were in, you know, our media brethren and sisters down in North Carolina building him up to be something, and I'm still waiting for it. I think he's a great player, but I don't think he's... all that. Now, and that's my perception. I can see I just absolutely bowled you over with that.
No, sorry. I know. I mean, Carolina media has a tendency to overhype things. Let's be real here.
That they do.
Not all of them do. Some do.
That's part of their job too. I'm not going to diss them on that because you know what, it is about getting readership and listenership and viewership, and yeah. I get that part of it. I really do. I understand that, but back it up. You know.
Well, you know how college basketball is such a huge deal there in the Triangle when you've got all those teams and you know in the best basketball conference in the country and. Yeah, you want to try to do something like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I get all the glitter and gold that went with Zion Williamson. Even that's been downplayed recently. It seems to be settling, and which is good. You know, and I appreciated the hype to begin with.
Let me slightly correct you.
Okay.
It's one thing with the like Triangle Media's kind of stuff. ESPN will still jam Zion down your throat 24/7.
They do.
Let's differentiate.
Okay. Now that's true. So it's diminished a bit down in Carolina, but and even the ACC has sort of backed off of their hype there as well. I get why that's there. And I can't fault anybody for doing that. Kid is a heck of a player. I mean, and does some amazing stuff. But as you said, it's like ESPN, you know, kind of jamming it down everybody's throat. And you see so many people, and it's not people who hate Duke either that are saying this. It's like a lot of people who are you know, I like Duke. I don't have a problem saying that. But man, you know, there's an overload point here. You know, I realize he's a great player, but... I don't need to be reminded of it at every commercial break, you know, and that's basically what ESPN's been doing. So
but that's how they've been the last few years. Remember, yeah. You know, you got Zion this year. Last year was Trae Young, you know, Ben Simmons, yeah. You know, you name it.
And I keep going, who? Nah, you know, I think Zion will be a much more of an impact player in the future than either of the previous two that you mentioned. But, again, my opinion. Syracuse over Notre Dame. Let's move on because I'll get on a soapbox here in a minute and it won't be pretty. Syracuse is still finding their way, and Notre Dame wasn't about to allow them to just walk away with a win. Notre Dame, you know, early on in the season, I said, you know, why are people talking about Notre Dame the way they are? And you said, well, it's because of Bray. And you're right. You know, it's a lot of the, okay, it's history. And, well, every year is a new year. We see that in every sport. You don't have all the same players coming back. You don't have the same, you know, gelling team, you know, the mindset. So it's different. And I could tell right from the get-go, why are we pumping up Notre Dame? Other than the fact that, you know, everybody wants to pump up Notre Dame, and well, they're not all that. And they're showing that this season. They just, you know, next season, I think they're going to be, you know, somebody to contend with. But this season, unless it clicks late, nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, they're a young team. They lost, you know, one of their top seniors, Rex Fluger, for the season. And I do believe he announced that he is going to come back for another year next year. So that'll be good news. Granted, he didn't play well before the injury, but you know, having another veteran to go with this young core talent is going to be a good thing. Sometimes, you know, players, I think you gave me whatever you have, Jim.
It is transmittable.
But sometimes players, what they're good at doesn't show up on the box score. You know, you get a veteran presence with a group of young people, and you know, it helps them, you know, mature on and off the court, really. And that's might be Fluger's role next year. But mm-hmm. as far as the game goes, you mentioned, you know, Notre Dame was actually up at halftime of this game. But, you know, Syracuse took over in the second half, outscored them 35-24. You know, they do what they do. They clamped down on the press and shot, and, you know, it kind of rattled Notre Dame a little bit. And Syracuse got their shots going in the second half. Elijah Hughes had a double-double, 22 and 10. So did O'Shea Brissett. He had 19 points, 11 rebounds. You know, Tyus Battle, 17 points on 8 of 17 shooting. You know, the weird stat of this game is Syracuse only attempted 5 free throws. They hit 4 of them, but you know, not very often do teams end up going 4 or 5 free throws the entire game. But
a very low percentage.
And then you say Notre Dame, you know, say they're a young team. They've got work to do. You know, John Mooney, who went for 14 and 14, but you know, the rest of the team had a rough shooting game.
Yeah. I still think that both of these teams next year will be a lot better than they are this year.
Yeah, I want to give you a name to watch for Notre Dame, especially as we're coming, you know, getting into league play and then going into next year, mm-hmm. and that's Juwan Durham. He's a transfer from UConn. He's their best defensive player. You know, he's averaging over 3 blocks per game. He's definitely one of the better defensive players in the league. You know, not a superb scorer. He's averaging like 6 points a game, but you know, averaging 4 rebounds and like say 3 blocks in about 15 minutes per game.
He's going to be
all defensive ACC caliber player, if not by the end of this year, certainly next year.
He's certainly working his way there, and that's what, you know, that's what the coach wants. So, and like I said, next year. So let's move on to this next one. Duke stamped out a win over Clemson. we've had our conversations about Clemson. They have been a little bit wavy gravy, up and down. Mm-hmm. And Duke, pretty consistent. And I see more consistency out of Duke this year than I did from last. So that is an encouraging thing for Duke fans. It will be interesting as we start getting into the meat of the conference schedule, because I wonder if that consistency will be there. Well, I'm going to start watching for fluctuations. And I guess the easiest way to do that is really between watching the games and looking at KenPom and seeing where, if any, there are any fluctuations in their numbers as they go. And if I start seeing a downward trend, then we know that they're headed to a bad place. And they have done that before. But this game, I don't think they had very much trouble whatsoever putting Clemson away.
No, and I have been kind of on that I've been on that Clemson is a little overrated thing. I felt like some, especially getting into the Sweet 16, you know, you never know what happens in the NCAA tournament. Like, I didn't think Florida State was an Elite Eight team, but you know, they got there and almost got to the Final Four. But I thought some of their losses were bigger than people expected. You know, they already have four losses on the year, some close wins, some teams that you didn't expect them to be close with. But you know, Clemson ended up shooting 42% for the game, not too bad. But you know, they get pretty much outhandled and everything else, because Duke is just a more superior team, at least in terms of what they do best. You know, Zion Williamson had a nice 360 dunk, because that's what you expected him. But he's only a 19% three-point shooter.
Ooh.
25 and 10.
That's not really good.
Yeah. I still contend that Trey Jones is the most important player to this team, because he sets the tone for this team on offense. You know, he'll hit some shots when need to. But you know, earlier I mentioned the Alvarado stat of 7 assists and no turnovers. Trey Jones had 9 assists and no turnovers. And he is, like I say, he might be the most important player on this team, just getting the team set in the offense. Mm-hmm. You know, Cam Reddish had another rough game, 1 of 8 shooting, and he's had a couple of tough games. You look at going back to, let's see, 1, 2, 3, his last 6 games, 2 of 12, 4 of 12, 3 of 11, 1 of 7, 1 of 8. It's been a rough month of December and into January for Cam Reddish. It feels like he's maybe pressing a little too much. Remember, he was struggling a little bit early in the season too. In Maui, he shot 3 of 9 against Gonzaga in their loss, 4 of 10. He shot nothing but threes in that game against Auburn, where they ended up winning by 7. But you know, we look at Duke as the best, as you know, this elite team, but there are flaws with this team. Mm-hmm. They're not a great free throw shooting team. And if you can get a team that can hold the ball and not, you know, turn it over and limit those, you know, points off turnover, second chance opportunities, then you have a shot. The problem is you also need the proper size to handle a Zion Williamson. And they'll have next weekend against Florida State. That could be a team that could get them. I feel like that's a team Florida State could get them in Tallahassee. And then maybe, you know, they get Virginia at home in a couple of weeks. In College Game Day, will be there for that, you know, no doubt. You know, potentially a top 2 matchup, no worse than maybe a top 5 matchup. Mm-hmm. That should be a fun game. But yeah, it'll be, you know, like I say, Duke has its issues, but it's going to take a full team effort to beat them.
Not an easy win by any stretch. But I think you hit it on the head. There are weaknesses. And if you take the one that you just pointed out and use that as a baseline, that is where you can start to show you know, as I was talking about, a downward trend. You can use that as your baseline and then see how it affects everybody else and the correlation. And if you want to look at those sort of things, you want to look at stats, that's where I would start. And that's probably where I am going to start. And take that and start looking at how his performance is hurting everybody else. And then go from there. You know, if that continues much longer, he may not be on the court nearly as much. So anyway, intriguing matchups around the corner. UNC is at NC State. We're going to find out who's for real. Clemson at Syracuse will be a wash in orange. Virginia Tech at Virginia. This is lining up to be an interesting game. And Virginia at Duke. I'm just looking at the schedule, and Virginia really has a lot of incredible games lined up here early in the ACC. So it's going to be very telling how they come out the other end of some of these big games. Quick synopsis of all of our ACC teams, Will, a couple words. no more than that, because we've kind of run down everybody already. But just, you know, you can just say something as simple as thumbs up or thumbs down or, you know, need to improve defense, whatever. But let's start with Boston College.
If they're healthy, they can get to the middle of the pack in the league.
Okay. Pitt.
They will win a conference game this year.
Encouraging stuff. Notre Dame.
Could be a little up and down. Probably going to miss the tournament this year.
Louisville.
Better than expected.
Indeed. Virginia Tech.
Definitely could challenge the top two, or top three, I should say.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Virginia.
Arguably the best team in the country.
NC State.
Still not fully sure how good they are. We'll find out soon.
North Carolina.
They're better than the record indicates.
Duke.
Most talented team in the country.
Wake Forest.
Next.
Clemson.
There's a chance this team could miss the tournament this year.
Georgia Tech.
Could snipe a couple people, but will finish near the bottom.
Miami.
That situation is brutal. They'll challenge for the bottom of the league this year.
Wow. Florida State.
They're still a top 10 to 15 team, I feel like, despite what happened yesterday.
Gotcha. Good look at stuff. And thanks for that rundown of all these games and how people are performing, because this is a great look at the ACC, and we've got a lot more to come. Be sure to join Will on Twitter, where he's not afraid to tell you what he's thinking. He's at Will's World MN, and I'll be more than glad to tell you something you don't want to hear. And I'm at ACC The Q, and you can take that for what you want. You'll find the latest on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube at ACC Nation. And ACC Nation Sports on Facebook. Until next time, cheers.
Skol.